again, if you're a CEO of an RIR, Axel, if you'd like to come down this way, that'd be great.
Okay, we're going to start in 3 minutes. Okay, good afternoon and welcome back everybody. You'll have noticed we have a new crew on the stage. Delighted to welcome the ASO and RIR community. Louis asked me at a chairs meeting what questions the CCNSO would like to ask the addressed supporting organisation. And I have to admit, I couldn't remember being asked questions relating to the ASO, so we thought a good place to start would be an update from you on what you're doing and what issues you are facing at the moment. So over to you.
Thank you, Leslie. We welcome the chance to engage with the CCNSO, and I hope that this is productive for you and perhaps continue on for next time around. So, as Leslie said, my name's Louis Lee. I'm the chair of the ASO Address Council. You can find me all week, usually with a hat on, but I'll take it off just because we're inside and such. And if I'm with me on stage, along with Leslie, are the members of the RIR community that form the ASO function and the NRO organization. If I may ask Tomohiro-san to start his introduction, that would be great.
Hi, hello. My name is Tomohiro Fujisaki from Epinic. It's so nice to meet you. Thank you.
Yeah, just continuing on, my name is Wilfried Wöber. I am one of the three representatives on the Address Council for the RIPE NCC service region. So this is Europe and the bigger area around it.
Yeah, Adiel Aprogan, CEO of Afrinic.
And Axel Pavlik, Managing Director of the RIPE NCC in Amsterdam. Pleased to be here.
Scott Bradner, Aaron Board. Paul Anderson, Aaron Board, and also a member of the CIRA Board.
Kenny Huang, Executive Counsel of APNIC.
Wonderful. And amongst you is Sean Rivera Hotumi. He is on the AFRNIC, he's a AFRNIC representative on the ASO Address Council. And also sprinkled amongst you are staff from various RIRs. If you don't have one of these with you now, please raise your hand so you can get one. Okay, oh, one down here. At the opposite corner from where you guys are. Okay, is that... Okay, first part of this, we'll just go over what the ASO is about with a... All right, we're not going to do the slideshow version here. Okay, what the ASO is about, and I will zoom this... so you can see the whole slide. There we are. Go over the policy development process in our regions and also for the global PDP and some questions, answers, and how to participate. Then we can touch on some of the issues that we're dealing with. And hopefully we can talk about what things would be interesting to you. All right, the ASO MOU signed October 21st in 2004. It was an agreement between ICANN and the then NRO, which is the Numbering Resource Organization. The NRO fulfills the role of the ASO, and much of this material, the details are actually already in the pamphlet, so I don't actually need to read everything through here for you, okay? But the details are in here, and you may go through it at your leisure. But the important thing is that the NRO Number Council fulfills the role of the ASO Address Council, and our policy and development process is defined within the MOU. The Global Number Policy, policies are defined within the scope of the agreement as Internet Number Resource Policies that have an agreement from the RIRs according to their policy development processes and ICANN. Now, this global policy is global in that it requires specific action and outcome on the part of IANA to be enacted, to be acted upon. The Address Council comprises of 15 elected and appointed members from the five regions. So we have certain specific responsibilities and duties, which you can see up there. The principles in our PDP, open forum. We have an open mailing list and open meetings, transparent, in that our PDP is documented, policies and meetings are also documented. The most important thing, bottom-up consensus-based policies. Various roles include the community, consensus evaluator, board, and staff. The basic steps of our PDP, as you see here, these are the common steps between each five RIRs. There are minor differences in the way they're implemented, but the important things is that the community would be submitting the proposal. There's discussion both at the mailing list and open policy meeting. Consensus is evaluated, and then we go to last call before adoption and implementation. Now, beyond that, global policies are policies that have gone through the PDP of all five regions, and after adoption, it's sent to the ASO Address Council, which would do a review of the proposal, make sure that there's common agreement and there's adequate considerations. After it's passed through review, we'll pass it on to the ICANN board for adoption. Now, if the ICANN board finds that there's an issue for implementation or other issues they feel big enough they need to not adopt at that time, they can send that policy back to the ASO for review and to send back down to the RIRs. Now, when the board adopts it, IANA will implement. To date, there are 9 global policy proposals, of which 6 were adopted and implemented. 1 is still under discussion, and 2 were abandoned. You can see these policies on the website shown. Quick review. Global proposal is a policy proposal about the IANA and the RIRs. The regional proposals are policies about the RIRs and their own customers. I can take questions at this point, right after I show how to participate here. You can watch our website for news about the global policy proposals and other and actual global policies. You can participate in the discussions in your own regions. The mailing lists are open. Actually, you don't even have to stay within your region. If you see activity in another region that you're interested in and you wish to participate, please do so. There are no membership requirements. You do not have to reside within the region to participate. You can attend the RIR meetings either in person or remote. All right. And at this point, I can take some questions.
Gabby, do you have a mic for Jay? So while that's happening, how many of you registry managers are engaged in your RIR? Might be a good question.
Excellent.
Good. Jay.
Hi, Louis. Jay Daly from .nz. While the policy process for RIRs is very open, in my experience, the majority of people who participate are LIRs. Are the RIRs, which is in direct contrast to the domain name world, where there is extensive participation from the registrant community in that. Do the RIRs have any plans to deliberately widen the policy consultation and bring in far more of the people who are affected by the decisions as end users rather than just as LIRs?
Thank you for that question. As a question relates to activity within specific regions, if I may direct to the question to the CEOs.
If I got your question correctly, I think the RIR PDP process are already very open and open for even end user to participate. They are not exclusively for operators to participate. So which part of the process? So can you precise that?
Sorry, yes, I'm well aware they're open. From my experience, though, the majority of people who participate are LIRs. There is limited participation from people who are not LIRs, and my question was, will you be doing anything to actively encourage participation from people who are not LIRs?
Okay, so I got that. Yes, people who have more active are LIR because they are direct recipient of our allocation. But yes, we particularly from Afrinic region, we do training on number resource management and our PDP in different countries. And those training are not for LIR. Mainly, they are attended by non-LIR, which is a way of getting attention for other people who are not directly related to operation, network operation, to know how policy are developed and how they affect them day to day. Because very specifically in Africa, we have the issue of NAT, where many people, end user, have difficulty, for instance, accessing public IP addresses just because their operators tell them that they cannot or sell IP to them at a very high cost. So we try to use our training activity to raise that awareness that you can go to your operator, and if you are not happy with the policy, then join our policy development process to do it. So yes, it is open, but we and HRI, I know, are doing effort to bring end users. The big issue is that generally end users feel a little bit impressed by the technicality of discussion that happened in our policy discussion, but that is because, yeah, the policy are about numbers, and numbers are about routing, and then routing is about the way internet works. So it's a kind of difficult, it's a challenge for us, but we are trying to address that. But I would like to, my other colleague to
yeah, basically what Adiel said. Speaking for the RIPE NCC, we are not particularly focusing on end users. What we do is similar to what Arfenik does, do some training. We do lots of training, of course, for our members, the local internet registries, the LIRs, but also increasingly for others. We try to get out, and that's maybe answering your question to some degree, going out to universities and colleges where we can. Seeing that we are funded by the operators community, they want us to do things that are of great benefit and use to them, to the LIRs. So there is a limited, say, bandwidth available that we can spend on that. But we do where we can. I have a couple of invitations to go, for instance, to universities in the UK and speak there. But again, there are so many of them through all of our service region. I'm not sure that is entirely efficient. But then, yes, our meetings are open. We participate. All are invited to participate by email and remotely. Things like that. A colleague of mine said once when one of our attempts to reach out to the, say, business community, talk to CEOs and the like, failed miserably because nobody wanted to turn up to a free lunch even. He said, they're not interested in us. They think we are something like the plumbing. It works, and then that's fine. If it doesn't work, they'll come and talk to us. And maybe to some degree that's true for the end user as well. You know, the internet works, and I don't know the details of how it works, but as long as it works.
Speaking for Aaron, our meetings are open, and we encourage remote participation. The primary attendees are internet service providers, since that's the way the Aaron works, is it with internet service providers directly. But we do have significant in terms of effect participation by law enforcement. And sometimes governmental representatives. But no, we don't have much in the way of business community or DNS. But we are aggressively open, but we invite rather than insist.
And if I may offer an insight for APNIC, I do know that they have an extensive outreach program with education and training. And you see my email address up there, I'll be happy to get you in contact with the appropriate folks within APNIC to either get you answers or even provide training within your region. And Wilfred?
Yeah, well, I'd like to add a little bit to Axel's explanation for the RIPE NCC service region for our area. And looking at the overall activities in the community we call the RIPE community, which is not just policy development, which is broader than that, I was just compiling a list of components or contributors to that, and this starts on one end with people from the European Commission as sort of a representative sometimes for some parts of the citizens in Europe. I consciously say some parts of, but that's a political thing. Then we regularly have activities and contributions by academia, by individual universities, talking with respect to, for example, we had from Polish, University of Technology, talking to the issue of various character sets and internationalization of infrastructure. We are having the IT industry present on a regular basis, and we also have a very active anti-abuse community, which is definitely not aligning with the local registry community. That's an orthogonal activity. And we usually have some sort of media coverage. So when there is a meeting, when there is interesting stuff going on, you can actually read articles in the trade press in our region. So I don't know whether this is sort of touching on your question and whether this is giving you a little bit of background.
Any more questions or comments? No? Ah, Mathieu. There's always Mathieu.
Thank you. My name is Mathieu Veille. I'm the CEO of AFNIC, the manager of the .fr registry. I'd like to thank you for engaging in this meeting and coming to our meeting and introducing a little bit more about RLI. I can't say it in English, no worries. My question actually is to all of you about what you think the CCNSO could bring to you and basically what you expect from us in the coming future and how we can help you.
Thank you very much for that. That's actually one of the topics we're thinking that we could work on is where can we have collaboration and help each other? Another topic perhaps could be, I noticed earlier today, your working group on aligning your organization to be like the RIR service regions. So I may offer your help in any questions you may have about how that's forming, what are the thinkings behind the boundaries, and how that's been working out for us, either to me or better yet, to the CEOs of the RIRs. I think maybe, I can't think of the other topic. Oh, Scott.
We do have some common issues or concepts. We both have to worry about how we can get accurate contact information for the people that we assign or work with. And this is an ongoing issue with the trade-off between privacy and accuracy and completeness. In both cases, law enforcement needs to be able to contact the right people at the right time, and they get kind of pissy if they think they can't or if they think we're standing in the way, which is one of the reasons why we have law enforcement participation within the ARIN public policy meetings, is that they want to be very sure that we are collecting the information they believe that they need in order to do their job. So there's certainly a great deal of overlap in the information side. There's not so much overlap in the other part where different layers of the structure. Domain names were designed as a way to make it so people didn't have to remember IP addresses, and we reinforced that with IPv6. Nobody's going to remember that long a number. And also domain names were designed to be longer term than IP addresses, so you could change the IP address on a server quickly without affecting the users. So there is a purposeful disconnect, a purposeful layering between the two in terms of technology.
Thank you. I mean, that does highlight that maybe we have a common interest in sharing experiences around data accuracy and also potentially law enforcement that we could explore further. Byron.
Hi, Byron Holland from .ca. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or common position on the potential for monetization of the address space, and if there is a common feeling among the group, or if each of you are going down different roads?
All the RIRs have been discussing this quite a bit, and all the RIRs have one type or another of what Aaron calls directed transfer, where parties outside of the purview of Aaron can make some kind of deal to transfer address space, and if that involves money, that's all good for somebody. The policy is that address in, within the Aaron region and in most of the other regions, that address space can be transferred to somebody who can demonstrate the need for that address space rather than somebody who is speculating on it or something. You have to demonstrate that you're actually going to use it. There have been some quite high-profile transfers of address space for money. The highest profile one was a Nortel bankruptcy case where Microsoft bought 666,000 addresses for, I think, $11.25 an address. It's an interesting number, by the way, 666,000, if you happen to be into numerology. But in the end, that transfer was done completely within Aaron's policies. Microsoft demonstrated their need for that address space within the one-year policy requirement. We certainly expect to see more of this. We are in last call for a policy within the Aaron region which will enable transfers between RIRs so that somebody in the APNIC region could get address space from a source in the Aaron region, for example. And I think this will be a common thing through most of the RIRs within the next few months to a year.
I didn't get your question in the first round. Basically, talking about transfers of addresses, we have talked about that for a long time within the RIPE NCC, and our by now strong opinion on that is that we don't have an opinion on that. Transfers are okay as long as the transfer is registered in the registry. That is important. The correctness, as Scott said earlier, the correctness of the registry is the priority here. And apart from that, yes, we have a transfer policy. But yes, as long as we know about it, it's fine. Whatever the circumstances are, I'm not really concerned about it. Apart from that, if the receiving party is demonstrating need, then that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think it's the same principle for all of us as RIR in terms of demonstrated need for the use of addresses. The transfer aspect is something different. Some region has clear policy about that, and in Afrinic region we don't even have a policy for transfer. And that's also a picture of how our region, the status of our region in terms of available address for transfer alone, because the community has not seen the need probably at this time to have a proper transfer policy. But as we are getting close to the exertion of our pool, certainly we will see a policy on how to handle transfer precisely, but it will be around justifying need, even in terms of transfer and the registration, as it is for all the other areas. Thanks.
Okay, if there's no further questions, thank you. Jay, last one.
As you've come all this way and altogether, I thought it'd be fair enough to ask a difficult question for you. You're probably aware of Proposition 100 in APNIC, which is a proposal for IP address blocks on a national basis in IPv6. Now, one of the reasons given for wanting that is the way that the pre-RIR IPv4 allocations have stayed outside of the RIR system, and there is a perception from many developing economies that that is an unfair set of allocations. The ASO, well, as far as I understand, the RIRs have always felt no need to tackle those, A, because it was hard, and B, because we're moving to IPv6. Why would we bother with IPv4? Now, while I understand that from a practical reason, here we have very clear evidence that the perception issue caused by those pre-RIR allocations is now bleeding into IPv6 and may undermine our IPv6 efforts. So is it about time that the ASO started looking at those pre-RIR allocations?
Most of those historic imbalance in the polite term of diplomacy is in the Iron Region. Certainly the early allocations were done without the assumption that the internet was going to become a global phenomenon, and so therefore the needs-based requirement was not part of the initial allocations. So I wanted to say that, and then I'll come back to that. But while there is some people might have a perception that this problem exists in V6, the reality it is does not. If you look at the actual statistics of the allocations in V6, they are quite well distributed. APNIC is actually assigned more. I think, is that more than right? It's close, but more than an Aaron, and that's certainly that case. So the perception is being exploited, even though it's not real, and it's not quite clear how one can fight an exploitation when the underlying premise is incorrect, which it is with V6. It's certainly there in V4. It's an ongoing discussion, as you see in the brochure here. There is a global policy under discussion, which would have any returned address space be handed back to the IANA for equal distribution amongst the RIRs. That's under discussion. But as with your question earlier about the directed transfers and sale of address space, it's not that likely we're going to see a lot of returned address space to the RIRs, because if you have a bunch of address space, are you going to come give it to us for nothing, or are you going to try and sell it? And one of the things that we're trying to do to make it so that the distribution will be fair is to institute the inter-RIR transfer policies that I mentioned earlier, so that if there's a shortage in some business in APNIC or in RIPE, and there's a source within the traditional ARIN space, the legacy space in ARIN, that it can be transferred and then alleviate some of that pressure. But it's going to be the trade-off between the value, the perceived value of the address space, and the cost of moving to V6. And it's always any adoption of any new technology is that trade-off, the cost of staying with what you've got compared to the cost of moving. And we'll have to see how that trade-off works. Alex?
Okay. Thank you very much to the ASO and the RIRs for that update. I think we've identified some issues of interest and some further information we can work on. So thank you very much. Okay, Jörg, you're on next. Thank you. Okay, so thank you very much, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. So next we have an update from the DSSA working group, following which we will move rapidly on to the WHOIS session, an update from the SSRT, and then to end the day, NOMCOM. So that's the schedule, which I'm still trying to get us to follow, leading up to then dinner later on. Jörg.